Hi, I'm Anka Todorick, cookbook author, recipe developer, and mom of five, including two teens. Cooking with teens isn't just about whipping up meals. It's about creating a space for family connection in the kitchen. Join me as we explore the joys and challenges of cooking with teenagers, helping you navigate those tricky adolescent years. Whether you're looking for recipe ideas or just ways to connect with your growing kids, this show has something for you. The real recipe is quality time together. Now let's get cooking. Hello, and welcome back to Cooking with Teens. This is episode 3, and I'm so excited today to have Lucas, my 16-year-old, to kind of give his perspective, his experience, and what I'm really after are his tips and insights to help you and your teen get in the kitchen and cooking. And I think it's going to be really fun. I'm definitely planning on having Lucas co-host at least once a month, but we might bump that up to 2. I'd love to share our weekly recipes, everything we're cooking in this house, diving into more of the teen's perspective on cooking with your mom, cooking with your parent, what his own experience has been, his tips specifically, just from a teen's perspective on what would make it easier to start, and then some of the benefits he's seen firsthand. And then also we'll dive into how he thinks cooking together has affected our relationship, because I think obviously that's one of the huge components and why I'm such an advocate for cooking, because it's such a vehicle for connection and communication routinely. All right, Lucas, I would love to know what your tips are for parents, because they're the ones that are listening and reluctant because they don't know where to start. So what would be your advice for getting started in the kitchen, cooking together? Do you have any favorite recipes? Any tips for parents who want to connect with their teen?
Okay. So for some tips, I think that you have to start small. Do a pasta dish or a sandwich, because those are really easy things to do. With a sandwich, it's really just, you know, prepping and combining all your ingredients together. It's 20 to 30 minutes. Very, very easy.
What's your favorite sandwich? Give me like 2 sandwiches.
I love BLTs. I think BLTs are awesome.
You make amazing BLTs. Break down that recipe for like why your BLTs are so good, which is honestly the mayo, I think.
Yeah. So I think like any other BLT, it has bacon, lettuce, tomatoes. But what makes mine, I think, really, really good is the fact that you have to salt the tomatoes, which I feel like a lot of people don't do. That brings out the flavor of the tomato and it gives it just so much more depth in the sandwich. And I think that tomatoes are the most prominent flavor, if not, yeah, probably the
over
most
bacon.
Prominent flavor in a sandwich. Yeah, I think over bacon, because most people put more tomato. So it really is a tomato sandwich with everything else kind of just complementing it. So make sure you have really good, fresh...
Heirloom
tomatoes, yes. And then also the thing that makes it really good, or the reason that I really like my BLTs especially, because I do a rosemary mayo, which is so good. Essentially, you just add, you know, your mayo, you take a few sprigs of rosemary, you chop it up, and you add that in, make sure you mince it very, very fine so you get all the flavor of it without it being too grainy. And then I like to add some paprika and cayenne pepper for some spice. And I think that
Did you say
out.
Garlic?
Oh, yeah.
What's wrong with you?
And garlic. And also I get like, so I put like 3 cloves of garlic. I would recommend only doing a clove because it's really strong. And I put that on a microplane, but you can just mince it up and add it.
Well, it depends. 3 cloves depending on how much mayo.
Well, of course, how many servings. Yeah.
Right. So you blend that up in like a small little food processor.
No, I just mix it in a bowl.
Haven't you used a little mini food processor? Is that just me?
And that's just you. I've done it once because I was too lazy to chop up the rosemary, but I find that it's better to just chop it up by hand.
Why?
It's just easier. Less dishes. It's actually faster.
Less dishes is usually definitely a reason why I will opt sometimes not to use a blender or a food processor, just because of dishes. Although,
so annoying.
Although if you're cooking, you're not doing dishes usually, because in our house that room.
Yeah, that's true.
So, but
I just don't like to use it. It's too finicky. It doesn't work that great. I have to like remove it and then chop it up by hand anyway afterwards. Usually I just do it by hand.
Yeah.
And that makes the BLT really great. I think it adds a lot of flavor. The rosemary and the mayo, especially with garlic on top of it, it's really, really good. I love it.
Okay. And then how do you cook the bacon?
I just put it on a sheet pan in the oven, 350, until the fat is nice and rendered. And then I will pour that into a jar so you save the bacon fat for later recipes.
Side note of how important that fat jar is, we always have it in the fridge and it's one of our favorite things. I love it for chili, refried beans.
Chuck roast.
It's phenomenal, but that should be like another episode. But anyway, so yes, the fat jar. That way you're keeping all that delicious fat because we are a family that loves fat and flavor. But anyway, okay, continue. So you're baking the bacon, which is great, especially when you're cooking for an entire family because you're not cooking individual or like four bacon strips in a skillet, let's say. It definitely cooks evenly, more evenly, would you say?
Yeah. They're all uniform unless some pieces are really small. But because it's an oven, everything is nice and the same. It's all very good and uniform, especially when making a sandwich when you want everything to just be a bunch of pieces that you put together.
Okay. Moving on to the bread. What is the bread of choice? Does it matter?
Yes. I like sourdough, but I think everybody has their favorite breads. I like sourdough. You cut that.
Toasted or untoasted?
I toast it.
See, sometimes I like untoasted.
I don't know. It's not that. I toast it like lightly. And even for you, I'll lightly toast it because you just don't want it to be too soggy and then too chewy. You don't want like to bite into your sandwich and the bread is hard to get through, but the rest of the sandwich breaks off evenly. It's too annoying. So I toast it lightly.
Yeah. And this is this could also be a dinner, obviously, because we eat it for dinner.
We do this all the time for dinner.
And then you could do like a bag of fries or just cut up some potato wedges and add them to the oven so you could have like BLTs with potatoes.
Yeah, but I usually just like BLTs by themselves.
I love...
Or with chips. I know that's chips. More of a lunch thing, but if you just put some plain potato chips, it goes good with that.
I'll take a fry any day. So for me, I always vote for fries. Plus fries dipped in that mayo is another thing I could eat
by itself. Oh, it is really good. Yeah.
It's so good. So this is a great idea. I think most teenagers love BLTs. I think most people, obviously, if you're not vegetarian or vegan, but if you're an omnivore like us, BLTs are definitely up there. Okay, that's a great recipe. Pretty easy because it's mostly just a sheet pan. That's pretty much it. That's the only thing you're cooking and toasting some bread.
Yeah.
Okay, moving up to maybe like a step two of I wouldn't say actual dinner, but you know what I mean? Something where you're sauteing and doing a little bit more chopping.
Okay, so for that, I would say a pasta dish is great because you're just boiling some pasta and making like usually a very easy tomato sauce, which is just garlic, olive oil, tomatoes, salt.
When you say tomatoes, are you saying fresh? Are you saying canned?
You can do both. It depends on your preference, but usually canned is easier. You just open up a can, dump it in there, and mix it around.
Crushed, whole?
Crushed. Diced.
Yeah, we usually use a 28-ounce can of
San
Marzano. Okay, and then I guess with something like that, proper knife skills, I would say, and I think you'd probably agree that proper knife skills is like the very first thing you learn.
Yeah, it's very important. You definitely need it. It makes everything else easier. Everything else is faster. It's just a tool in your arsenal when you're in the kitchen that you really, really need.
What knife do you think like a teenager should have?
I think a 6-inch chef knife. Or if that's too small, an 8-inch chef's knife. Those are both very good options. Kind of like a jack of all trades. You can slice, dice, fillet. You can do everything with those.
What's your favorite knife?
I think I have an 8-inch chef's knife or a 6-inch chef's knife. I can't remember.
The brand? You like Japanese knives.
I like Japanese knives. They're much nicer, much sharper. But they're also brittle, so they're prone to breaking. But
yeah, I think it's like a preference. I think the only way is if you kind of... There's some obviously great German knives. There's some great American knives. It really kind of depends. I think the more you get into cooking, the more you'll see. But you need more than one chef's knife because you're cooking together.
Yeah, definitely. And then some paring knives for cutting small things.
And a serrated knife for those tomatoes.
And bread, yes. Serrated knives are very important.
Okay, so those three things and a proper cutting board that's
nice
and heavy.
Yes, a large cutting board, very important. Wood, not plastic, large wood cutting board.
Yes, okay. So I think that's really good, especially with the tips with proper knife skills, essentials. And then we talked about the pasta, which is a great idea. Is there like a simple dessert or something for brunch, let's say? Let's say like dinner is a little bit harder to do because of everyone's schedules, but maybe like a Saturday or Sunday.
I think let's backtrack to dessert. Dessert is an awesome thing to do with teens or kids, because if you can do some sort of a butter cake or a raspberry cake in the morning where you just make a batter, add all the ingredients into a bowl and then mix, pour it into your pan and then top with frozen raspberries, you have something that's really good, really elevated, very easy to make. And that's definitely something that I think that's one of the first things I ever learned how to make with you. And that was really fun and really easy. I remember being so proud that I had made something that seemed so fancy.
I think that's really the key, the confidence that you get, especially with these simple recipes, because when you're looking at it, it seems intimidating or even elevated, although this is literally like one bowl flour, a little bit of coconut oil, some frozen raspberries. I mean, it's like 7 ingredients, I think, and then you just bake it, but it just looks really pretty. And when you started to make it and you were reading the recipe, which is another thing we should be talking about, the importance of properly reading recipes and then learning techniques. But anyway, when that comes out, the pride and the confidence, which probably then gave you more confidence to try harder things.
Yeah, I think that once I mastered that, I was like, this is too easy. I want to try something new. And I saw grandma making crepes and I was like, oh, let me try that. And I was not good at it the first like 3 times, mainly because I was too little and I couldn't really hold the pan. But after that, I tried it, and then,
yeah, you're a crepe master right now.
Yeah, I do crepes a lot because I think they're awesome.
You even flip them. I mean, I gotta say,
that part's not hard though. So
yes,
you do the crepes or something more intermediate. Crepes, I think, are also pretty easy. I think they're, once you get the hang of just,
I feel like
them,
those are pretty intimidating.
Another one of those things that are very easy to do and seem very fancy, because you're really mixing everything in a bowl and cooking them. I think cooking them in the pan is harder than doing the mixing. And then, you know, once I mastered crepes, I tried stuff like macarons, and, you know, you can really get up there in terms of difficulty if you just work your way up step by step slowly. And it's an awesome thing to do with your parents, because that's what I did with you. That was awesome when I learned how to make macarons, that you were helping me with the mixing and measuring and making sure I didn't screw anything up.
Yeah. And then for brunch, I think pancakes or like waffles. Waffles are easy. You love making waffles. I'm not a huge waffle fan, but you love making waffles. And I think that is so easy because it's a waffle maker on top of, like, you're not even using the stove.
Yeah, it's really easy. You just make the batter and then pour it in the waffle maker. That's like something that anybody can do. And it's awesome because then you can go, like, I do it because I thought it was nice until I realized you didn't like waffles.
But everyone else likes waffles. I'm the only one that doesn't. And I'll
eat them. It's just a nice thing to do for the whole family.
Absolutely. And that way it's like someone can do the waffle batter and you could do some eggs and maybe bacon, because why would you pass up the bacon? Then you can move up to making steak for the family, which is probably, would you say making steak is like your ultimate favorite thing to make? By far. And then when was the first time you made steak?
Oh, I think I was 12 years old. No, I think I was 12 or 11. And I had asked you, like, I keep seeing steak videos online and I want to try to make one. And we bought 2 strip steaks. I had cooked them, I thought, perfectly, and I followed a recipe, and then I had cut them open and it was rare in the middle. Completely rare. And I was like, what did I do wrong? So I put it back in the oven, and I probably just should have seared it longer. That would have been better, for like another 5 minutes. And then I took it out again and was like, these are still not done. And I put them in even longer. And then they were good. Eventually they were good. But I was still very embarrassed that I had gotten it so wrong.
Okay, but now you're a pro.
Yeah, I've come a long way.
But I really love that you mentioned that, because I think that's the thing. It's like everyone starts with not cooking well, and it's through technique and practice that you just get better at it and better at it. So that's like such a great encouragement, because I don't even make steaks anymore, because Lucas is exceptional at making steaks with like an incredible sear. But anyway, what is your technique for cooking? What is your favorite way to make a steak?
I think just regular searing and butter basting and then letting it rest and eating it is very simple, depending on the thickness. And you have to do like a sear and then put it in the oven, or a reverse sear, which is the opposite of that, which is when you put the steak in the oven and then you sear it to get a really, really good crust.
I haven't tried that. I don't know why.
I've never tried it either. I'm too lazy to do it. And usually we don't get steaks that are thick enough to need
reverse
anything in the oven. And it's just done after searing it for 3, 4, 5 minutes on each side.
Okay. Can you very quickly just walk through the steps specifically of how you make your steak?
Definitely. So you take it out an hour early because you want it to be room temperature for an even cook throughout the steak. Season, pat dry. You don't want any moisture on the outside. Salt, pepper. Get your pan ripping hot with some high smoke point oil, like avocado oil, clarified butter, something like that. Then once you think it's hot, it should be, you know, glistening a little bit. And also maybe smoking. So what I do is I put my fingers in some water, splash that in the pan, and that should sizzle and crackle, and you should know it's very, very hot. You lay the steak down, you press it down for 20 seconds, 10 seconds, let it sear for about 2 minutes or more, depending on the thickness. Flip, sear for a minute, minute and a half or more, again, like I said, on the thickness. Throw in some butter, garlic that's been peeled and crushed, 3-4 tablespoons. And then some thyme, rosemary, and then kill the heat and start to baste it in that butter.
How are you basting it? So like
basting means when you put the steak at the top of the pan, tilt the pan, that way the butter runs to the bottom. You take a spoon and you spoon the butter over the steak for the next minute. That just gives it some amazing flavor. And then when you're done with that, you put the steak down and pour all the butter and aromatics, as they're called, onto the steak. To keep it warm, and just because when you cut the steak open, that butter is like an amazing sauce.
That tastes, I love really that good. Butter.
Yeah.
That butter with the garlic it's infused with the herbs is like my favorite thing. I actually prefer it that way than with like a wine sauce or like a béarnaise or whatever kind of steak sauce people usually like. I think it's one of the best ways to eat steak. There you have it. You can start off with the BLT. I think we eat BLTs like every other week, maybe.
I think so too.
There's always bacon. There's always something.
We just had one yesterday.
So. Yeah. There's always bacon in the fridge. And then, there's always lettuce and bread and mayo. And we always have herbs. If it's been one of those days and we're like, what are we going to make for dinner? BLTs is usually the first thing that pops up for us.
It's just like a really good lazy option that absolutely. Takes. So much less effort and time for so much, you know, flavor.
And then the pasta dish, which is really simple. You could even do like an Alfredo. It's more like Parmesan. Or melted butter and then a bunch of, I don't know, 6-7 cloves of minced garlic. You saute that for like a minute. Pour in some heavy cream. Then a good amount of grated Parmigiano Reggiano because you need the good stuff here. Take it off the heat. And tossing your pasta. I love to add like fresh basil. That's a simple dinner, not just like the tomato.
Yeah.
And then the last one was that simple snack cake, which I definitely need to get that recipe up on the buttertable.com so we can link to it in the show notes. And then mastering a steak, which I think is super,
super fun.
Super fun, super delicious. And I'm telling you, it's also really impressive. I think if anyone comes over and you're making them a steak, it's like, wow, you've nailed it. And as a teenager, that's a great thing to know how to make.
Yeah.
So when you leave home, you can make yourself a steak because that you can do
for, if I can like, afford it when I'm out of the house.
You will. Don't worry. Okay. And then no, because like you can buy one steak. You know how other things when you're living alone.
Yeah. It's so much cheaper. I keep forgetting. You don't have to make all these sides and the amount of steak you do. It's for one person. So it'll be so much easier.
Well, it's because a lot of recipes, it's like hard to make for one person, but I think a salmon fillet, one steak is a lot easier to cook for just a solo versus like some other recipes. And
definitely. Then,
okay, so we've kind of covered very broadly, just like we're just dipping our toes into the cooking part. Okay, so then we're going to wrap up with the last question, which is, how do you think cooking together has affected our relationship?
Okay, this is an interesting question. I think that we're definitely closer than we would be if I wouldn't be cooking with you because we probably spend, oh my goodness, 3-4 hours on top of our normal time together every week cooking in the kitchen, whether it be prepping or just talking while we cook. And I think that, you know, we really get to spend quality time together because you know, at a certain point, it really just becomes these mindless tasks where you're just bonding with the other person, almost like a chore, but more fun.
Because it's routine, which is kind of what I think part of it is because it just became part of our life, just like how, you know, like these are the things we do. This is what we do on the weekend, or your routine of going to school, after school activities, et cetera, that we've been able to put a strong value on cooking together and having dinner together. And so you're right. It kind of has become not like an afterthought, but you don't think about it because it's become that habit. And you know something's a habit when it's kind of not mindless, but it's just something you do. And I think another component of it is that the conversations, at least from what I've noticed, have flowed pretty effortlessly. And sometimes we don't really talk. It's not like really a conversation. It's just like there's music in the background, or we're prepping, or it's like we need to get dinner on the table fast, or we're cooking faster, but we're in close proximity. And that alone, I think, is valuable because you're still close together. You don't have to have like serious conversations or like really in-depth conversations. I think maybe like the really serious ones are like 10% of the time, and the rest of them are just like daily check-ins, how your day was, or like something you saw online, or
something that I wanted to try and cook with you, obviously, which leads to more of those conversations, funny enough.
Okay. And then the last part that I wanted to touch on, which is obviously such an important part of this whole thing and why this podcast exists, is how do you think cooking together has affected our relationship?
I think we're definitely way closer together than we would be if it wasn't for the cooking, because it's just so many hours that add up every day, every week, every month, every year. So it's, you know, you spend way more quality time together. And at a certain point, once, you know, you learn the basics of cooking, it's no longer like a lesson and a class where you're sitting there trying to understand how to cook. It's more of like this very simple activity where you're both able to just, you know, speak to each other, spend time together, debrief about your day or ideas you have, so on and so forth.
I think the difference is like, you know, cooking is something we just did as a family. It's like something we valued, and we're foodies and we love to eat. So it just kind of naturally happened. But I think when you're going after that connection, sometimes it could feel forced. So I think it's like, how can this be as like organic and laid back as possible for both the parent and the teen? Like, do you have like a tip or two in there for them?
Yeah, I have to. I think that if you're going to lecture them about something, don't do it in the kitchen. It should be more of like a bonding space. Like if you're upset with them, just talk to them some other time. Because I think you've done that once and the food turns out worse, honestly.
It affects the food. It really does. I definitely learned from that. It's like, that is not the space.
Another one is you shouldn't like force it. Even with us, sometimes either if one of us doesn't want to cook, the other one can just do it. So it's definitely something where you should be doing it out of your own free will. It shouldn't be something where you're forced to come, because then it's more of a chore, and then it has like a negative connotation. Then you don't like it anymore. It's no longer enjoyable. And then it sucks.
Right. With the caveat that it's kind of like you establish with your teen saying like, this is really important and I'd like to try this. So they can agree to like once a week. Yeah. You know, I think that's what I've said, like, to start.
And I think they'll want to do it more because I really enjoy cooking and I do it way more than once a week. So
are there any other tips or any other benefits that you've seen from cooking together?
I think that, you know, the relationship deepening between two people in the kitchen is something that's hard to see all the specifics. It has a lot of broad benefits. I think that you get closer together, which that in and of itself has a ton of different things, which means you spend more time together, you're closer together, you talk about more things.
So I think what it provides is, because it's not forced, and it's a routine, that you just show up, and so you're prepping and you're cooking, And each day is different, right? Different things happen, different thoughts, different activities. And since it regularly happens, you can talk about something.
Yeah, you're going to end up speaking and debriefing in the kitchen, which is something that both of us do.
Yeah,
all the time.
I think the debriefing part is really cool because it's kind of like, hey, how was your day? Checking in. And then we also talk about what we're cooking or what we want to make for like the rest of the rest of the time. Okay. Hopefully we didn't overwhelm people. I think we gave a lot of information. And correct. What will be great is in future episodes, we could focus on like one very specific topic and break it down. So if there is something you would like us to answer or get Lucas's perspective, any questions at all, any suggestions, please shoot me an email at anka@thebuttertable.com or send me a DM on Instagram @thebuttertable. And I would love to answer that on a future episode. And then in the future episodes, we'll definitely add show notes and links to recipes that we're making, that we're developing, creating, that we would love you to try and to that are teenager approved, which is the most important.
Definitely the most important.
But you're definitely like very like a foodie teenager, I would say.
Yeah, I eat a lot of stuff. So
yeah. So it depends. James, who will be on another episode
eventually,
he would probably be a better gauge because he's also pretty adventurous, but I feel like he has more of a teenage,
the more classic teenager
fried chicken, Doritos, sort of Popeyes,
chicken strip attitude. Yeah,
he loves the air fryer, which you don't, which is a whole nother topic to discuss. Your aversion to air fryer and your brother's love of air fryers. But anyway, thanks for tuning in today. And that's it from us. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks so much for tuning into Cooking with Teens. Make sure to follow the show to catch all the new episodes. I'm also at The Butter Table on Instagram if you want to share your own teen cooking adventures, the good, the burned, and the inedible. Until next time, keep cooking up those conversations.